You are listening to the Authentic Success Podcast, episode number 6. I'm Sean Tuttle at The Natural Professional. Creativity, magic, being in the flow, this is the stuff I love to think about. So I am so pleased to bring you in this episode a conversation with Max Kahn, because this woman knows how to dive into her creativity. As a writer, she writes poetry, fiction, essays, and has finished her first novel. Her writing has appeared in numerous publications, and she's taught creative writing at the University of California, Davis Extension, and in private classes and workshops. That's not all. As a musician, she's an award-winning composer and an avant-garde violinist. She's performed with groups. Check out these names. They're totally awesome. The Relentless Compassion Orchestra, the Tiny Monsters, and Sawbones. She's also a dancer and has performed in several states across the U.S. And now she's applying her love of all things creative with her passion for helping others reconnect with their own passion and creativity through in-person and online workshops.
En ce moment, les vols sont tous les matins pour dire des trucs plus loin de ce qu'on.
We talk about different aspects of creativity and what that means in your life. What lights you up? How can you sustain an ongoing creative life? How do you promote inspiration? How does play factor into all of this? This discussion around creativity is so critically important for those of us who want to bring our own personal magic, our own personal passion into the world through our business. We need to know how to go back to that place, how to dive in on a regular basis in order to bring forth the goods that only we can bring forth. So really, it's absolutely critical for our businesses that are reliant on our unique voice to stand out from the crowd, to bring innovative offerings, and to be of the most service to our people and our tribe. With that, let's get started.
Thanks so much for talking with me today, Max, with the Authentic Success Podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, my pleasure. So one of the things that has really struck me about all of the things that you've done in your life is obviously it's all very creatively oriented and very expression oriented. Mm-hmm. So I would love to begin with understanding a bit of where did that come from? Did you come from a very artistic, creative family?
Mm. Well, that's a great question. No, I don't. I come from a very intellectual, heady family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, both my parents are academics. They're both philosophy professors. So the mind was really exalted in my family. And my path is really the path of the heart. And so it was not very easy for me to find that and to cultivate that. And I think because it was not easy, it led me to my work of helping other people to find and unleash their creativity and to trust it and believe in it. So, yeah. But I was a creative since I was a kid. It was what I was drawn to from the get-go.
And how did that evolve, being in, like you said, a heady household?
Well, I will say this in favor of my parents, that, you know, when I said I want to play the violin, they got me violin lessons. And when I said I want to dance, they took me to dance classes. And, you know, they are very cultured people. They enjoy the arts, and they took me to a lot of performances. And to museums. I mean, that was totally a part of our lives in that way. So they didn't obstruct me from becoming an artist, except for the fact that the words starving and artist were always paired in my family.
Oh.
And so it was definitely the message I got was, that's a nice hobby, dear, but what are you going to do for a living?
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. So it was a mix. I mean, I got exposed to a lot of great culture and, yeah.
Well, a lot of people do, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they end up performing with groups across the country or, you know, take music to the next step and become a composer or mm-hmm. dance to the extent that they join a troupe.
Mm-hmm.
So how... Was that still in while you were living at home, or was that sort of, were you on that track to kind of becoming more of a professional in these different endeavors, or was that after you left home?
It is what I wanted. When I was 16, I realized I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. It was everything that I was drawn to, was the arts. But I didn't have a sense that you could make a living at it. So I kept asking myself what else I was going to do to support myself. And that question really threw me off for a long time. It was very confusing to try to navigate the fact that I was really spending all my time and energy on the arts. And I kept thinking, well, I got to find my career. Yeah.
Well, and you've probably noticed, we'll get to your current day teachings and stuff, but one of the things that I've noticed comes up a lot in my work with people is that it's our own beliefs that
yes.
become that self-limiting prison.
Absolutely.
So what happened after that? How did you bust through that?
And mm-hmm.
what were a couple of the key steps that brought you to where you are today?
Some of it I don't know. You know, some of it lives in the mystery. But when I went to college, I went to Bennington College in Vermont. And when I enrolled in college, I had no idea what I wanted to study. So I went through the entire course catalog and circled every class that interested me. And out of that, I was shocked that 13 of them were in music. And I had, like, a few in other areas. So I took 4 music classes my first semester. And I discovered how much I loved that and became a music major. And so it, in that way, in a certain sense, I kind of stumbled into it. And I was a big success in college, and I was sort of a star in the music department, and so I didn't have to think much. It was all working great until I graduated, and I literally was starving. I didn't have enough money to eat or heat my home, and then it got very, very hard for many years, like very confusing, casting about for how to make a living, and very hard to keep my art going in those conditions. Ultimately that's what led me to my work and my path, because I did finally, after 5 years, go back to school, graduate school for music, to be a composer. And I believed that I was following my bliss, and so everything would line up. And instead, I basically had a nervous breakdown and left graduate school.
Wow.
So it was a big shock, like, this is when, you know, I'm taking this big chance. I'm going way into debt. This is when the doors are supposed to fly open for you, according to Goethe and everybody else. And it didn't happen. And it was very confusing.
Yeah, really?
And it was really my own self-doubt that ate me alive. I mean, I really can't blame it on anything other than that. And that is when I began to have to look at, what does it take to be healthy internally as an artist? How do you sustain an ongoing creative life in a healthy way? And I had to really deal with my own ambition and my own self-doubt and the things that were killing me, basically. So that led me to really studying very in-depth what promotes inspiration, what keeps us in the flow, what shuts it down, where are the pitfalls. And, you know, interestingly, and you probably know this from your own life, the pitfalls are the same for all artists. There aren't that many, and they're really the same ones. You know, I began to see the patterns and what works, what helps, and what hinders us. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so. Well, I know the question that's on everybody's mind right now are, what are those pitfalls?
What are the pitfalls? Yeah, not that easy to for me to just, like, catalog them all.
Well, but... and I know that you do classes all around this. Mm-hmm. So maybe just kind of a general, what are some of the bugaboos that, that harm people?
The number one thing, and this is probably the least popular one I could share or the least, like, easy for people to swallow, but I have seen it to be the absolute number one key that either unlocks the door or shuts the door. And that is accepting that you are in partnership with a field of life larger than you, that your art does not come from you alone.
Mm.
As long as we ego identify with our own art, we are on a trajectory to soar when it's going great and to absolutely crash and burn when the world doesn't return recognition, or we think we failed, or so that, I mean, if you had nothing else, like, that is the first key, is really to accept that your art comes through you from something greater than you, and therefore it's not all up to you. It's really about getting in a receptive state and then understanding that sometimes it will flow and sometimes it won't, and not taking that so personally.
Right, which it sounds like you did, and most of us do, as we're getting going and learning, which adds to that self-doubt. Was there a particular project or time period where that awareness started clicking into place and you started seeing your own transformation because of it?
Yeah, I think most clearly when I first did The Artist's Way, and it's why I teach it, it's the heart of the course. Like, the subtitle of the book, The Artist's Way, which Julia Cameron wrote, so I want to be clear about that. It's not my invention. It's hers. It's a best-selling book that's sold over 2 million copies. And it's called The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity. And the heart of the course is that awareness that your art comes through you. And I already had it before I did the course, but that is where it got really clear to me that that was the linchpin.
You know,
and that was where I had gone off the rails, like, because of all the approval and success in college, that's where I got very ego-identified with my art, and that was the place where that awareness really got grounded.
So I know you've worked a lot with The Artist's Way, and when you first said it, I got chills a little bit. I was like, oh. Is it mostly, I don't think it is, but I would love to hear from your perspective, who is that for? Mm-hmm. Is it for artists? Mm-hmm. Is it for people who consider themselves to be creative? Is it for people who have fallen off their creative path and are looking to get back on? Who do you see that book, and then I know you do a workshop with it.
Yeah.
Who's that for?
Yeah, well, I just completed a round of teaching it, and I was reading the final evaluations two nights ago. One of my students said, I think it should be called The Wholeness Way for All Humans.
Love it.
And I think that's beautiful. I wish I'd thought of it myself. It's really so true. Because we're all creative, and when I meet people who say I don't have a creative bone in my body, I say you can be alive. Living is an incredibly improvisational creative act, and we're all very enormously creative. Obviously, there are people who are more artistically inclined and more imaginative or inventive, but everybody's creative. The thing that was a wake-up call for me around the book was I had a big judgment about the book years before I ever opened the cover. I'd only seen it on shelves, and I had decided that's not for real artists, that's for faux artists. And what the course taught me is there's no such thing as a faux artist. There's no such thing as a real artist. So that was a beautiful gift of that. So I mean, I share both those stories because there are the people who think this isn't for me because I'm not an artist, and there are the people who think this isn't for me because I am, because I'm a professional artist or I'm a real artist.
Right.
And it's really for anyone who wants to explore their creativity more, unleash their creativity, get past creative blocks, open to a new chapter creatively in their lives, if they're stuck in a rut in their creating, and just to cultivate a deeper heart connection to life, more joy, more passion, more fulfillment, more play.
Right.
Yeah.
So my relationship with the book, and I think there are a lot of people in this camp as well, is I didn't read the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think I read like maybe the first chapter or two. And so in my mind, The Artist's Way is all about two things, the weekly date and the morning pages, the three morning pages.
Yes.
And the morning pages for me, I guess you could say, helped lube up my connection with my own soul communication.
Yes.
And that is very much, you know, now what I see my work about is, you know, how do you combine our daily life, which seems to have all this mundane, boring stuff, when actually it's an awesome opportunity for practice, for listening, and to, you know, infuse our daily life with soulful living.
Yeah.
And I've been, had been journaling for many years before that, but that practice, that dedication and the discipline of doing 3 pages every morning sort of amped it up to the next level. And now I didn't do the artist date as much, but those morning pages, and so many people that I've read online have referred to their morning pages.
Yes. You know,
there are apps that are written to capture your morning pages that no one's going to see, and all that kind of thing. Which gets me thinking about structure and discipline in connection with creativity. And I'm wondering if what that triggers for you in the context of the work that you do with people.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of structure. Not discipline. Actually, Julia Cameron has a beautiful section in The Artist's Way later in the course on enthusiasm versus discipline.
It's a better word.
Yeah. It really is, because discipline usually comes from some internalized parent that we have some idea that we have to drive ourselves hard and relate to ourselves as a drill sergeant, whereas enthusiasm means the God within, literally in Greek, and it's our natural inclination to go towards something. But that said, obviously there is a certain amount of like sitting yourself down and getting yourself to do things initially, especially where there's resistance. And so that's actually where I think schedule and structure is super, super helpful. Because it reduces resistance. Like, if you know that I'm going to use our darling Lil McGill, fabulous painter, as an example. If you know that every Thursday is your painting day, as it is for her, then there's less resistance to going into the studio. Because you always do it on Thursday. So even though you feel like crap that Thursday, there's less of a, am I going to go this time? Because you always go. If you don't have the schedule, resistance really has a chance to rear its ugly head, and life and all the possible distractions seem a lot more compelling. So that's where I feel like structure and schedule are super, super helpful tools for artists. And conversely, or paradoxically, many artistic types really rankle at the idea of structure and are kind of proud of how freeform their lives are. And so it's an interesting challenge, but it's something that I see when I work with people, particularly one-on-one, and I say, okay, let's talk about creating a schedule that actually works for you for creating. And next thing you know, well, they're writing way more poems, or they're making way more paintings, you know.
Right.
And it's feeling better, and there's less of a war within around it. So I think there's a really important place for that. Yeah.
Would you be willing to share some structure that you have instituted in your own life?
I would. I mean, so here's the thing. I really battle with it myself. And the funny thing is I'm a very disciplined person, quote unquote. I have a lot of structures in my spiritual life that are non-negotiable. And I have a very hard time keeping to a regular schedule for my own creativity. So I will try a pattern for a while, and then it breaks down, and I become very discouraged about it. Like, I have a tendency to give my time away to everyone else. But my ideal patterns are to have the late morning be my creative time for 2 hours. And basically, that's what I've noticed is my best creative time of day. So it makes sense to try to capture your best time for what you most love.
Right.
I used to write really late at night, but then I couldn't sleep because I get really wound up when I create. So, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's my ideal. And preserving that is very hard for me.
One of the words that stuck out when you were saying that was non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And so for your spiritual life, you are willing to make that non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And for your creative life, you're not.
Not yet, yes.
What's the difference?
Well, I think it has to do with my own creative healing. Like, every time I teach the artist's way, I uncover another layer in myself of my own lack of faith in myself as an artist, or lack of faith in life to support me as an artist.
Oh.
So the biggest stumbling block for me has been the one I referenced at the beginning of the call, that I still don't believe I can survive financially as an artist.
As an artist, right.
So I tend to preference money-making activities over creating.
Right.
At great cost to myself. I mean, I notice how much better my life goes when I make time. So currently what I'm doing is on Monday mornings, I look at my schedule for the week and I block out sometimes that week. So they aren't the same time every week, but I have that habit on Monday of looking at, well, what time can I get this week?
Yep.
And that's been working pretty well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I call the review and planning session,
mm-hmm.
the wrap session, the week, that plopping that in your schedule. And then the tricky part is honoring it.
Right.
When it comes because somebody called, or you're not in the mood, or the cat's being funny, or
yes,
something comes up. Something always seems to come up.
Yes. And some of the learning with that for me has been scheduling those times at the wrong time, like late afternoon, when it's just like, no, now I have no creative energy. So
yeah.
You know, to get real about that with myself. The other thing that I found with it from my own life, so now I pass it on to my students, is that one of the keys to making that work is communicating it to the people you live with.
Mm-hmm.
Or important people in your life. If you don't live with them, it's like in advance.
Yep.
Like Thursday from 11 to 1, I'm going to be doing this.
Yes.
So, you know, they're not secretly hoping they're going to have a lunch date with you or whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a while, I was putting a little sign on my door saying, you leave a note or come back later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But having that defined, knowing that it's done at 1,
yeah.
i.e. you can come back at 1:15 and I will be accessible. But mm-hmm. until then, mm-mm.
But I know I'm not supposed to ask you questions, but I find one thing I find about that, because I'm doing the same thing, is like, yes, you can come back at 1:15, but of course, when you're on a roll, sometimes that turns out to be a real bummer if someone comes back right at 1:15 and you've gotten on a creative roll.
Yeah, and I will blow by that 1 o'clock time if I am on a creative roll, and I will beg for understanding and say, I will come find you when I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Because that roll is really the thing.
It's precious, yeah.
Yeah, that's the light that I'm looking for. And if I tap into that vein, so to speak,
yeah.
It's like, this is what life is about. This is what my service is about. This is what my work, capital W, is about. It's like, no, I'm not going to drop it for a taco.
Right. Yeah.
So let's combine this with the idea of success. Because success is something, obviously, that we're going to define for ourselves. And we're coming from a culture where it's changing, but there's been much more bottom line oriented. And we get to pull in these other concepts of, if I get to tap into that vein of passion and purpose, like, to me, that is a successful day. I don't really care what came of it. You know, like, if I get to have that experience, that to me is just like the coolest thing ever. And I want that to be a part of my business, because I do want that to be a part of something that is in turn supporting me. So it's, you know, a big, beautiful loop. And understanding that a lot of success, I had this client at one point, and she said, you know, the only difference between successful people and not successful people, the successful people just keep doing it. Like, they just keep showing up, and they just keep doing it, which requires sometimes enthusiasm, sometimes discipline, but that constant coming back and coming back and coming back to it. But let me start with, what is your definition? Do you have a definition of success that you'd like to share?
I don't have a definition of success. I mean, I notice that, you know, I'm infected with the cultural dynamic of, on the one hand, of feeling that success has to do with income and outer recognition. Like, there's certainly that part of me that craves that and knows that it's a trap. Of sorts. I mean, obviously, a certain amount of income is important to survive, but I think at a deeper level that success is about fulfilling my heart path. You know, my heart's work, what I think of as my sacred work in the world, and the more that I'm able to give that. And have my life be about my core values, the more I feel a sense of success that is an ongoing kind of fluid thing, because I don't think there's any point that anyone ever reaches where they feel like, okay, I'm successful.
I'm done, I'll stop.
Right, because we always see the next mountain, you know, to climb. So, but for me, when I'm feeling really good about my life, is that sense of alignment with my deepest self, what I really love, and that I'm sharing that with others. For me, that's a key piece.
So I gleaned, and this is totally my own projection, but I'm going to interpret that part of your version of success is coming through actually in the titles of your workshops, which are awesome.
Thanks.
Deep play, romancing the muse, riding the dragon, freedom to write. Like, those to me manifested, like, that is just kind of ultimate success, spiritual fulfillment and fun.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk a little bit more about those. From talking with a mutual friend, I know that play is very important to you.
Yes.
And I'm raising my hand. I am, like, the first to acknowledge that when work gets intense, when our vision gets set on something, that is one of the first things to go for me. And I've been noticing lately that I can tell that I'm holding myself back because I'm not giving my spirit the space to play and have spontaneous adventures, and I'm yoking it to the computer too much and thinking and it's like, wow. So I would love to hear more about your thoughts on play.
I like to call myself the Empress of Play. Play is so important to me, and it's so undervalued in our culture. So it's really, I mean, I might more accurately call myself the ambassador of play, because it's just like my mission to spread that in the world. I think it's really misunderstood. People think of play as something frivolous and silly and just for kids, or something you get to do after all your work is done.
That's mine.
Yeah. And for me, play, I mean, I've actually, you know, there's a lot of study of play now. And play is something that all animals engage in, all animal species, and they engage in it throughout their lives, not just as young animals. And it's how they learn new skills, how they learn, you know, the essential tools to survive. But it's also how they learn, how we learn essential attitudes to survive, like cooperation.
Okay.
Imagination, thinking outside the box, which gets touted a lot, all comes from play, that space of play, which is a very kind of open-ended space of wonder and curiosity and not knowing the outcome, not being attached to outcomes, a cooperative space. So really, I think the ideal is to always be playing, that everything we're doing would be play.
That is an awesome ideal. I know I'll have a tough time beginning to practice that tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what are a couple of things that people might do to start inviting that? I mean, if they've been going from almost none, and there are a lot of people coming from almost none, to at least getting some in, is that do you suggest more of a kind of weaving it in with what's already happening, or like doing kind of full stop, separate play and exploration?
Yeah, I would. I mean, obviously, it's great to invite yourself in any activity to ask, how can this be more playful? You know, especially something that you hate.
Right.
Like
bookkeeping.
Right. Like, does that mean colored pens or little stars, or like, you know, how can I make this feel better, be more playful? Like, what would make this more playful for me? So that's one thing. But I definitely also really encourage like the full stop. And in this, in one of the best tools for that is the artist date from the artist way, because the artist date is a date that you make with yourself. You plan it in advance so you don't just do it on the fly, although that can be a good way to start too. But you plan it every week, a date with yourself to do something that you would love to do, that just feels good to you, whether it's restful or nourishing or playful or exploratory. And you do it alone. You don't bring anyone else along. And the reason that that's important is so you can follow your own inclinations. Like, if you set out to, you know, go to the zoo for your artist date, and as you're driving there, you see this sign for a pottery show, and you're like, pottery show, that's what I want to do. If you have someone else in the car, that's a problem. Then you have to negotiate, or you may stifle your interests, or you may not stay standing in front of the lion cage as long as you really would want to. So that's the, you know, just taking one artist date a week is really a powerful way to begin to rekindle that spirit of play and permission for yourself.
Permission. That's that. It seems like that's kind of the secret there.
Yeah.
Is one, there's the learning how to listen, but then there's also giving ourselves permission to even listen and to follow that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and a lot of people, when we start the artist way and start the artist date, say, I have no idea what I want to do. Right. I can't even think of anything. And so, you know, the thing that I say, two things. One is to start by just checking in with your heart, asking yourself, what would you like to do? And if nothing comes, then experiment, you know, try things. And some dates, like all dates, will not go well. And so it's important to understand that. Uh-huh. That if you have a bad date, it's not the end of your dating career,
right?
With yourself, right. That you just say, well, you know, because sometimes you plan something fabulous you want to do and you go and the place is closed or something, you know, I mean.
Right. Or, you know, expectations. We set up some kind of, this is going to be awesome.
Yes.
And and then something that you're like, oh, this should be okay. Low expectation. And then we can be more open to it and have a much more fluid, spontaneous experience from it.
Yeah, and it takes strengthening that muscle of listening, you know, because you may start out with a lot of should dates, like, well, I'll go to the museum, that sounds good.
Right.
And really it's totally boring. To you, you know, it's not what you want. I mean, as I've gone on doing artist date after artist date, and we live in a small town, so it seems like the choices are a little limited, you know, what to do. I mean, the example I give is one time I asked myself, what do you really want to do? And I want to pet small furry animals. And I was like, really? Okay. So I went to the pet store, and they didn't have any. You know, they didn't happen to have any small furry animals at the time I went. So I just watched the fish, which was pretty fun. You know, it wasn't a great date, but it was like, well, I'll just go along with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you gotten some good stories back from people who felt like, oh, you know, I don't know what I would do, and have been kind of disconnected from that play part, and have sort of, I don't know, like kind of had a revival of their playful self?
Yes, absolutely.
And what kind of difference did that make in...
Oh, huge. Oh, my God. So huge. I mean, that's... It warms my heart that that's something I get back in the evaluation so much, is that I've let myself play again. I'm enjoying the value of play in my life. I'm seeing how important it is. And,
right.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the best artist dates are like, I put on soul music and danced around my living room, you know, people will say, or, you know, I went and rode horses because I've wanted to do that since I was a kid, and I never have.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like letting themselves finally listen to those voices.
Right.
So, yeah, yeah.
So then, I'm wondering about how you see the connection between that passion, so people connecting with their passion,
mm-hmm.
and creativity, because you do workshops with both,
mm-hmm.
and some might call those different types of workshops, mm-hmm. and I have a feeling that they're really quite connected,
mm-hmm.
so yeah. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Like how passion connects to creativity, is that your question? Or
yeah, well, a lot of people... it seems like have unfortunately become sort of disconnected,
mm-hmm.
to what, and the term that you passed on from the artist way, what lights them up,
mm-hmm.
For whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't supposed to, I'm not supposed to like that because it's not PC. I mean, for mm-hmm. any reason,
yeah.
or someone told me that it was stupid,
yes.
or whatever. And it seems like both of those are very permission
Mm-hmm.
based,
mm-hmm.
as far as if we allow ourselves to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
So what is my question? So wondering about a connection between the two isn't quite clear enough.
Well, maybe a connection between what lights you up and creativity, for sure. I mean, I think it kindles your creative spark automatically when you get in touch with what lights you up and you give yourself permission to love what you love, whether that's gardening, whether that's watching science videos, you know, that is going to spark your creative fire because it's your unique connection
mm-hmm.
to your creative passion. It's what you're fascinated by. Like there's a wonderful exercise in the first week of the Artist Way where she asks you, if you had five other lives, what would you be? Like a cowboy, a gypsy, a linguist, a physicist, a tightrope walker. And it just begins to open up that, like, I get to say whatever I want. You know,
right.
It's not like anybody's asking me to go for these things or whatever. But it puts you in touch with these passions you may have kind of let lie along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks you to look at how can you have some element of that in your life.
Yeah.
You know? You don't have to be a pro baseball player, but are you going to games? You know? Like, if you love going to live baseball games, when was the last time you went?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, shall we go with this? What? Yeah, well... what do you feel like could still be a part of this happily?
Well, one thing I would say, because you touch on the permission piece, and the three P's that I have identified as being key to inspiration, getting in that flow, which is what a lot of people crave, of course, because it's an amazing space to be, as we were saying, when you get in that place, it feels so good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you lose track of time and sense of self. And so that kind of opening to inspiration, the first P is partnership with that field of life larger than you. And the second one is permission, but an aspect of permission that we didn't talk about is that I feel is really essential when you set about to do anything creative. And, you know, whether that's design something for your business or bake cookies or whatever, is to grant yourself permission to do it badly. Grant yourself permission to make mistakes, to mess around, to have what Anne Lamott calls a shitty first draft. It's really, really important to have the permission that the first draft can be shitty. You know, it's like you can't expect a masterpiece at the outset, or that completely closes the flow. If your judge, your critic is sitting on your shoulder saying, "Why'd you put that color there? That looks terrible." You're just going to freeze. So there has to be a big space of permission when you're allowing yourself to create and invent and imagine and not judge it. And so I actually like make that a conscious agreement at the outset. Ask people to make a conscious agreement. I agree not to judge myself, like during this session of creating. Because there's a place for the discernment to come back later, you know, in going from a first draft to a second draft or a second draft to a third draft. But it doesn't belong there at the outset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And
partnership, permission, and the third one is play. No surprise there. And with that, it's really about play is about being in a space of exploration and curiosity and wonder, not knowing, and trying new things, messing around like, well, I've never tried sticking things to my paintings before. You know, like really getting in that mind of a child. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Thanks for adding those.
Yeah.
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 So, do you have any workshops coming up?
I do. I have another series of The Artist's Way, and that's going to start on Thursday, June 12th.
Okay, and that's an online
class. It's a teleclass, so okay. It's taught by conference calls. And I'll just say a couple words about that, because I get a lot of pushback on that from people saying, oh, I really want a live class, I want a live experience. And my own experience teaching the conference calls has been amazing, the transformation that people have been getting, and the depth of intimacy and connection they make with one another. Mm-hmm. It is not at all what people think, that it's going to be this cold, distant, weird, disconnected thing. People have formed really beautiful friendships and connections. And there's a way in which I'm finding that the conference call medium is actually supporting heart connection, because we're not looking at each other, we're not making these snap judgments, and we're hearing, listening intently to each other's voices.
Right.
And the service I use allows me to put people in small groups to talk to each other, and we do that every week on the call, so you're talking to different people and meeting them. And we also have an online forum where people connect during the week. And so that class is going to meet Thursday evenings, 5 to 6:30 Pacific time, and Friday mornings, 10 to 11:30 Pacific. So it's both times. There's a class call on Thursday evenings and a Q&A call on Friday mornings.
For how many weeks?
For 13 weeks.
13 weeks, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And all the calls are recorded, so if you miss one, you can download it, which is one of the great advantages of the teleclass, that you don't just miss the class.
Right.
And it allows people from all over the world to be participating together in creating that creative community that's so essential.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, this is for people looking to explore their creativity, want to invite more into their life, reconnect more deeply with their own creative self.
Yeah, their passion, their joy, to rekindle that, to find out what play is all about, find out what they love, to give their gifts in the world in a bigger way. To unblock creative blocks. It's a profoundly transformational journey. I mean, it's totally life-changing in my experience for people. So, yeah, so that's The Artist's Way. That's coming up June 12th. And then in the fall, possibly in the summer, but definitely in the fall, I'll be teaching my Freedom to Write class for the first time as a teleclass people not in the local area can experience that process, which is an amazing process for opening the flow of words. And super fun. So that's coming up. And then locally also, I have a year-long group for poets, and we open it every 6 months if new spaces open, and that will open in July. And I think I will have one or two spaces open in that. It's called Convocation of Poets.
Nice. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me, Max. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And I'll just say my website so people can find my classes.
And it'll be in the show notes also. But okay, yes, please do it verbally so it's in there also.
Yeah, so it's maximakahn.com, and it's maximakahn.com. Maximakahn.com. Yep. Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Max as much as I did. Links to her site and upcoming course are in the show notes. Just go to naturalprofessional.com. Please, please, please leave a review. This is how the podcast aggregators such as iTunes and Stitcher know that this is a cool thing and worth sharing. Quick shout out to our most recent 5-star review from the Herb Nerd, who says she really loves the show and that she loves the guests and the engaging questions. Thanks so much, Herb Nerd. That's it for today. Until the next episode, stay natural.